Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer, the radio show. This is Robert Noss. This is where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination in our lives. We have a wonderful, dedicated, passionate dreamer as our guest today. Her name is Jean Campbell. She's one of the stalwarts and moving spirits of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. She currently edits their magazine, Dreamtime, and is on their board of directors. She is also director of the World Dreams Peace Bridge. We'll hear a bit about that later on. And her published works include a book that has excited me very much when I discovered it years ago called Group Dreaming, Dreams to the Tenth Power. She's recently co-edited a book on children's dreams called Sleep Monsters and Superheroes, How to Help Kids, such an important theme. So welcome, Jean.
Thank you, Robert. It's always nice to be with you.
Yes, you're one of those who understands and practices probably all of your life the idea that dreams are social, not just individual. I mean, they're not just a matter of individual psychology. Ancient indigenous dreamers know this very well. I mean, if you're amongst the people like the Kukaja out in the western desert of Australia and someone's telling a dream, people are immediately going to start saying, who, what, when, where? Who did you visit last night? Did they visit you? Was it good? Was it bad? What was the location? So, you know, you're one of those who've written about, encouraged us to understand that we can dream together in many senses. We can have telepathic dreams. We can have synchronous dream experiences in which we may or may not be fully conscious that we're dreaming with other people. You've written amusingly and spoken amusingly about how often when you go to a conference you're approached by people who dreamed you before they met you for the first time. I have this experience all the time. In fact, Jean, on some days in my life I receive up to 40 dream reports from people who claim that they're dreaming of me. Of course, my defensive reflex, if I don't know them, is to say, well, I'd ask what part of me is like Robert, whatever I associate Robert with, but I think that some of these dreams are telepathic, are social, are interactive, and all the rest of it. So this is part of what we want to discuss. Tell us a little bit about your own experiences of social dreaming, interactive dreaming, telepathic dreaming, and how you've developed that practice.
Well, let's start with the experiments that I did in the late 1970s and the early 1980s. I had been part of an experience of dreaming intentionally for somebody called the Dream Helper Project, started by Henry Reed at the ARE and the Association for Research and Enlightenment, for those who don't know. And I looked at the dreams and I said, these sound like the same dream. It sounds like we were dreaming together. And so then it occurred to me to ask a group of people, 10, if they could dream together. If we gave them assignments, could they dream to a particular place with particular people? And they did. So it was fairly clear. We did 3 of these experiments over a period of years, each with group with 10 people. And we asked them to do things like meet at a restaurant or bring a Christmas present to somebody. And these were people who didn't know each other before they started the experiment, and we didn't give them much information about each other, but there they were dreaming physical descriptions, dreaming same places. And so it occurred to me that it was probably true that people could dream together, and that was very exciting to me. Since that time, well, after 9/11, after the Twin Towers experiment, or in explosions, I wrote to a group of people, and I said, So how would you like to join me in dreaming up some peace? And that was how the World Dreams Peace Bridge began. And that was about 50 people then. It's far more now. And because we report our dreams online, and often we'll set up dreaming together, it's been fairly clear that people could and would do that thing of dreaming together. And I don't know how your experiences have fit with that, but I expect they have.
We routinely, well, and frequently in the workshops and trainings that I lead, both the on-site and the online ones, will agree that we will attend a dream rendezvous with some further objective. I mean, it might just be for fun. Usually someone in the group knows a place that the rest don't know or know little about. For example, one recent group, we had a Quebecois, a French-Canadian there, who suggested a market in Montreal. And he had been to the market in Montreal, but the whole group agreed to go there. We just had fun. I mean, we agreed we would eventually meet up at the cheese counter. we got a very thorough description of what cheeses were on offer, what they tasted like. We had experience of some of us wandering to parts of the market together that we had not seen in ordinary reality, and having the experiences confirmed by the person who suggested the rendezvous in the first place. I mean, that's just a fun example of a dream excursion for the sake of a dream excursion. Sometimes we do it with sacred sites. For example, I teach in the Czech Republic a great deal, the Horozip. A hill in the middle of the Czech homeland is the sort of spiritual center of the country and part of its founding legend, and we have had groups go there to meet the spirits of the land, right there at the literal center, heart of Europe. This is the heart of Europe, this part of the world. And we've had astonishing experiences, which not only of encountering each other, but are encountering some kind of group energy. And then we might set a theme of trying to dream up something like peace or healing for an individual or community or some aspects of the environment, and bring back reports which we can sort of table in the morning and make a story out of that. So we've been doing in various ways something similar to your experiment. One of the things that astonishes me, Gene, is that people are sometimes quite surprised when this kind of thing happens, when it happens spontaneously. It seems to me entirely natural that people who are connected by affinity, by love, by affection, by shared work, by a shared cause, by even simply physical proximity, would be dreaming spontaneously of and with each other quite frequently, unless their shields were up or they wanted absolute privacy, which we might want. It just seems to me to be expected that people with some kind of psychic connection or common affinity would be dreaming with each other. One of the things that your wonderful World Dreams Peace Bridge project leads us to think about is the extent to which this ability to dream with and for each other can lead us to do some good in the world and change some of the noxious patterns that are taking hold.
Yeah, and that's exactly true, Robert. You know, I think there are many fun things we can do. I think that there are many people who really don't believe that dreaming together is possible. But the World Dreams Peace Bridge has been dreaming together for, since 9/11. And we have found that regularly, for example, the project, the work that we did with children in Iraq, starting in 2003, while the bombs were still dropping, has produced, I can only call it friendship and peace. You know, it's harder to bomb somebody that you know, that you've been dreaming with. And I think that if people were to just widely adopt this practice, it could change the world.
Well, it would be lovely to think that if we got enough dreamers together to dream with common purpose, we could shift the whole world into a parallel event track where certain people have never reached positions of power, and we have people with more soul and civility, you know, in charge of our fortunes, and many more women. It would be nice to think that. Unfortunately, we get up each morning and we see the world pretty much as it is. But you and I know that we can light beacons. We can create hearth fires. We can bring people together in communities, which, although small in number initially, are spreading some light and maybe inviting others to claim the tools for soul and survival that dreaming gives us. When you're asking about the experiments that I stage, I confine myself to begin with talking about assignment sets for the night, for night dreaming. But you and I also both know that dreaming is not simply a function of sleep during the night. We can dream in other ways. We can dream like shamans journeying with the drum. We can dream in some forms of meditation that value images. We can dream in reverie. We can dream in lucid dreaming. I routinely in my workshops have groups travel together with the aid of drumming on an assignment. The assignment might be to explore someone's dream territory opened by the portal of an individual dream. It might be to dream on a theme, in which case we might agree on a doorway for the journey. We might go to a tree of vision. We might go to a temple of dream healing, a non-ordinary reality where some of us have been before. We might go to a magic library or a magic museum, a place where we can have access to wise teachers on a higher plane. So that is wide awake shamanic lucid dreaming, and the experiences are often extraordinary, and they include people having very closely similar travelogues when they come back, confirming the idea that we can travel together in non-ordinary reality and do some good and bring back some results, and also that there are orders of reality beyond the physical that are arguably no less real. That's one of the things that you get to know as a dreamer. Over time, as a dreamer, you stop contrasting the dream world and the real world because you recognize that
it's all the real world.
As well, right?
Yeah. I recently had one of those experiences where I was actually looking for, in the dream state, what I would do a presentation on. And I woke up from the dream having talked to a group of people and said, "What's next?" And I thought that was funny. I mean, you know, I'm like, okay, well, that was helpful. And so I sent a note to the World Dreams Peace Bridge, at which point there were no fewer than 7 people who immediately responded, "Oh, I dreamed with you last night." It was not intentional. We hadn't set it up for any particular reason. But clearly, not only did the group of people answer the question about what I needed to be talking about, but they demonstrated, here's a group of people, we're all dreaming the same elements of a dream, and, you know, there was no setup for it.
Right.
So what I'm looking at is, and this one maybe we can talk about too, it's like I find people to be a little nervous about the whole idea of dreaming together. You know, well, hey, dreams are my private space. So it's like they feel nervous and they feel incompetent. And I'm not entirely sure. I try to make it fun for people, you know, a first experience of, well, yeah, that could be fun. But, you know, how do we go about convincing people that they actually not only can dream something together, but can move the dream forward?
Well, it always requires an experience, doesn't it? I mean, it's like precognition. People, including in the International Association for the Study of Dreams, are often skeptical about precognition until they dream something or intuit something ahead of time, and then it happens. And at that point, the cracks in the carapace begin to show, and they're open to discovering not only that you can see the future, but that you can get early warnings, early opportunity dreams, which enable you to shape a better future. So when you wake up to the fact that you have been in a dream situation with someone else spontaneously, and you enjoyed it, or it was okay, once you recover from your shock, if you weren't thinking
right
at all, you might be game to stage some experiments. I mean, just thinking about the people who contacted you, the 7 people after you were asking what's next in the night, I have received and seen other people receive extraordinary help from others through dreaming. Let me give you an example of it. By the way, I'm always learning from my dream self. I mean, my dream self might take many forms, have many escapades and many excursions, but sometimes my dream force is extremes of, is far ahead of me leading workshops and introducing techniques and exercises and writing mm-hmm. books that I haven't committed yet. Here's a story which might interest you in view of the one that you shared with us, about another dreamer dreaming of me and bringing me information from my dream self that I did not have in my waking memory. So I've been teaching at Esalen. I've taught off and on and off a quarter of a century. A very wise woman, a double PhD, and a wise woman in the sense of the crone of the elder, contacted me after the workshop to thank me for a lecture I'd given. Well, I knew she was talking about a dream because I had not given a lecture in physical reality that night, so that's not an exotic thing for me doing to be doing in either world. And she said she was impressed by how I wrote 5 points on a whiteboard explaining why we miss dreams of the future even when we're interested in looking for precog information in our dreams. Now, this made me sit up because I was writing a book of mine named Dreaming True at the time. I'd just come mm-hmm. to the point where I wanted to list 5 reasons why people are interested in dreaming the future, still miss precognitive messages. But I hadn't formulated those 5 points of clarity. So I promptly messaged her back and said, did you keep notes from my lecture, or could you reconstruct what Dream Robert said to you in the lecture room? She promptly sent me 5 points, which she said the Dream Robert had written on the whiteboard in her dream, and I put them in my book almost unedited because the style was mine. The clarity was something beyond what I had accomplished up to that moment. So that sort of thing makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, well, whatever exactly is going on here, it produced a deliverable bill of goods, a deliverable statement, which could be used in a book from somebody picking up what my dream self was doing in a lecture room, which my waking self did not remember.
And so
we learn it always by experience, don't we? I mean, these games are not spectator sports. They're participatory games, and we learn by simply doing it. I've learned a lot from spontaneous experiences that I haven't set up, haven't asked for, mm-hmm. just delighted me. In preparation for our talk, I opened a folder in the database where I keep my extensive dream journals headed Dreams of RM, Dreams of Me. There are hundreds, by the way, Gene.
Yep. I can only imagine.
I mean, there are hundreds. I get so many. By the way, the ones that just to sort of leave the train line for a moment, the ones I tend to remember with delight are the sort of really funny ones, like the report that began, I thought I was looking at a Tibetan wrathful deity. It was sad and blue bear, and then it turned into Robert. I mean, that's the sort of one that I tend to remember. I mean, the symbolic, archetypal, richly comic, even sort of funny papers kind of dream. But, I mean, here's a simple one, for example. I dream one night that I have a very moving encounter with an ancestor, one of my Celtic ancestors, and he pins something like a cloak or a cape with a Celtic cloak pin. And in the morning, a friend of mine messages me that she dreamed of a ceremony in which something like a brooch, a Celtic cloak pin, was pinned to my shoulder, and she describes the design of the brooch. I'm quite certain, although I was not conscious of her in the dream, that she was present at least as an observer in that dream space, and that's kind of thing much richer in detail than I've noted in the summary report. That squelches any resistance to the idea that this kind of stuff is going on. As I look over the whole spectrum of social dreaming, as you've reported and experienced it, and as I experience it, practice it, and teach it, you know, I notice many varieties. I mean, there are the synchronous dreams or the concurrent dreams, which two or more of us are having similar dream experiences at the same time. We may or may not see each other inside the dreams, and whether the interactive or mutual dreams, the ones in which two or more dreamers are aware of each other and interact with each other in a shared landscape. They may or may not be synchronous in terms of ordinary time, because, of course, in dreaming, we slip the bonds of ordinary time and we get out there and we operate in a different way. There are shared dreams in which we've embarked on intentional, interactive dream travel. There are group dreams, which you've been talking about, which particularly fascinates me. group dream travel, group experiences of the whole circle or network of participants. The range is tremendous, and the content and the takeaways from these things are fascinating. I mean, they can include specific information. They can include the experience of, so to speak, walking in each other's shoes and expanding our humanity, which is very much what your project is about, helping us to understand more about other humans and their situations so that we are less prone to leap to judgment.
Well, and I think that that is key to any widespread group dreaming, the business of developing some empathy. When we look at dreams, you know, there are a lot of cultures that have very deep, strong beliefs about what the dream is supposed to be, what it's used for, and so on. And I can well imagine, for example, some of my Muslim friends who have a very strong belief in, you know, if the dream is about a sacred figure, it means this. Getting into a group where people say, well, that dream might mean, and you can look at it this way, and you can look at it this way. There are cultures around the world who have very explicit ideas of what the dream means. And if we ignore that or don't know it, I think that then we run into, it's not just cultural biases. It is the deep-seated belief, for example, in, say, Korea, where before a child is born, parents will pay somebody to dream for the child or dream the child's name. So I think that our need to be aware of other cultures, if we're going to try dreaming together, is really important.
Yes. Well said. It is very interesting how different cultures have traditions of understanding dreams and traditions of how to talk or not talk about them, who to take them to, because Islam has a tremendously rich dreaming tradition. It's arguably at least as rich, if not richer, than the tradition of Jews or Christians. The slight problem is that there is a tendency to take a certain kind of dream to an authority figure, to the sheikh, rather than to share it in the way that we've learned to do in the dream work movement. I've taught in Turkey several times, and it's been very interesting. You have mostly educated, somewhat westernized Turkish people, mm-hmm. but all Muslim by official faith, and all cognizant of what Islam expects and demands. It's been very interesting watching them step outside, hand me down, you know, of dream meanings and the idea that the dream must be either whispered in secret to a close family member or friend or taken to the sheikh, beginning to open up to the if it were my dream equalitarian style of dream sharing. We're talking to Jean Campbell. She's a wonderful dream worker, luminary of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, student and practitioner of the phenomenon of group dreaming. We'll be back to share more after the break. This is Robert Noss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world. And now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer, the radio show. This is Robert Moss. We're talking to Jean Campbell, a dream worker, dream editor, editor of Dreamtime, the magazine of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and somebody who recommends that we learn more about group dreaming and social dreams. One of the things to understand, Jean, from my point of view, when we talk about group dreaming and dreaming with other people, is that dreaming is traveling. This is the understanding of indigenous cultures. If you don't just have a dream, you go on a dream. A dream might be a journey in consciousness, a journey of the soul. In the language of the Mercuritari of Venezuela, the word for dream is adhacata, which means a journey of the soul. And I found this understanding very widespread, and it's helped me sometimes in my own rambles, meeting indigenous traditions and ancient traditions that have kept the old ways going, like the goddess tradition in the Baltic, which I've come to know quite well because of my dreams. I found that having the right dream is a passport. Having a dream which is recognized within that culture, having a dream, for example, in which, without knowing what it was, I dreamed the beginning of the creation myth of the Mananjali people in southeast Queensland, as told to made men of that tribe. That gave me an in. That gave me an invitation to sit with the elders of the Aboriginal people of that part of Queensland. Going to the Baltic and finding that I was dreaming from an ancient Jine, an ancient priestess of Jemina, the earth goddess of the Baltic. Some old words and old symbols gave me an invitation to spend a weekend with a white witch in Semogitia, the part of Lithuania that's associated with the bear and the dominance of the bear, and to be given spells and rituals handed down grandmother to granddaughter for generations and never shared with men or non-bolts. So I've had, on the one hand, looking at it from the outside, we see maybe, you know, a sort of hand-me-down lexicon of dream values in a certain culture, and maybe we see prohibitions on talking to dreams outside a certain circle. I found that where dreaming is actually alive in different cultures, arriving with the right dream can give you the visa or the passport to be taken right inside that tradition. This has happened to me recurringly.
I think that's absolutely true. And one of the things that I have seen conducting dream groups in an international forum where there were people from a variety of cultures participating is that the people in the workshops were able to understand one another better based on their experience of, say, I remember one particular where a woman from Japan had a very culturally involved dream. Other people in the workshop also had that same type of dream. So then they could talk about, well, you know, here's the tradition, and here's where I may fit into it.
Right. I'm thinking of throwing my mind back to a day in Manhattan, leading a workshop in New York City. We had a very elegant, very well-educated Japanese corporate wife who'd come to the workshop, and she said, I'd like to tell you a dream privately. So I said, fine, go and have a cup of tea or something. And she told me the dream, and she said, I'm at a beautiful beach, and the ocean is not too wild, and I want to step in the water, but my husband will not let me step in the water. He says, I say, I have to get in the water. He says, the only place where you are permitted to get in the water is this pool. It's an ornamental pool 2 inches deep. This was the dream. And my goodness, how the dream mirrored a social situation well known in traditional Japanese society and really by extension even in corporate Japanese culture when it comes to the West. What a revealing dream that was. It takes us back to those Japanese texts from the imperial period in which women are right. Writing about their dreams in the context of a semi-imprisonment in a formal court-ordained order. So dreams give us a window into so much about humanity, about social conditions, about how it all works. Jean, when you look over your life, the turning points in your life, the choices you've made and the awakenings that have taken place in your spirit, do you think of any particular dream or more than one dream which were turning point, revelatory moments for you?
Well, probably the most revealing and the most turning for me was not, in fact, a dream. It was one of those, I guess I could call it a synchronicity. I was in the room when a psychic who was directing an organization or was working for an organization, which I eventually directed, simply said to the group of people that were assembled, it was a board of directors, and she said, there's a person that you have ignored in this room, and that person is our choice for directing the organization. I was startled. Of course, they gave me the choice. I mean, it was, you know, she was in a trance, and the entity or whatever speaking through her said, you know, you've got choices here, which is always true and always important for the dreamer to remember. You know, but you're the person that we think would be able to bring a group of people together like this. And for me, like you say, you know, there are a lot of forms in which very good information can be delivered. And certainly this was a very competent trance psychic. And I was like, well, okay, I can consider that. So that was certainly one of them. I can give you another that was kind of funny if you want.
Well, let's just pause in this for a moment. Of course, it's all a dream. This waking life is a dream. Light is a dream. And certainly it's a memorable moment when something seems to borrow the vocal cords of the psychic to express something that is taken up by the group. You're actually reminding me of a poem by William Butler Yeats, in which the love god Angus borrows the vocal cords of a sleeping drunken king to communicate with someone. Something has stepped in and used the vocal cords. It's a dreamlike moment. I was really casting about, though, for a moment in your life when you yourself came awake, when you yourself, whether it was synchronicity or a dream or a vision, this is one in which your presence and the necessity of you was announced to a group in a convincing and effective way. But I was really looking for a moment which your own sense of purpose or understanding of reality was brought alive and awake by dream, vision, or synchronicity.
Probably the most useful one of those came many years ago, but a lot of my friends had spirit guides, Indian, Native American, you know, and I heard them talk about their spirit guides, and I'm like, oh, I want a spirit guide. You know, I mean, how nice to have your own person who gives you information and all that sort of thing. So I was lucid dreaming of meeting a spirit guide, and I did. I went into my living room. I woke up in the dream, went into my living room. There was a man sitting in a chair, and I followed him out the door. I said, you must be my spirit guide. He didn't really answer me. He went into, eventually, a room. The door closed behind him. He went out the other side of the room, and I was trapped in a box. I said to myself, once I woke up, once I finally got out of the room, I said, that was probably a clue. Maybe it is trapping ourselves to get into, oh, I'm going to find a spirit guide. And I never looked for one after that.
Very educational experience. We're talking to Jean Campbell about group dreaming and dreaming in many senses. This is The Dream with Robert Mast. We'll be back for more after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our lively guest is Jean Campbell, practitioner and writer about group dreaming, interactive dreaming, and luminary of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. I was talking and asking about turning point dreams, and Jean gave us one in which she decided, which led her to abandon the phrase spirit guide, which I'm very glad she did because it irritates the heck out of me. I encounter many intelligences that some might call spirit guides, but it never seems an adequate term to me. I want to tell a turning point experience, Jean, which really defined my purpose and put me solidly on the track I've been following since, the track of a dream teacher, for which, as you know, there is no career track in Western culture. So, you know, part of the story, I was called, literally called, in a state of lucid dreaming to my first encounters with a Native American woman who lived 250 years ago. I call her Island Woman in my books. She insisted on speaking her own archaic form of the Mohawk Indian language, laced with spiritual vocabulary from the Huron-Wendat people among whom she was born. And I eventually had to study those languages in order to decode my dreams. And this is the prelude to the turning point dream. After many years of studying and trying to find my way and filling my house with one of the most complete collections of books on the indigenous peoples of North America before the American Revolution, and beginning to find my way as someone who would lead workshops combining shamanic journeying techniques and some of what the American Dream Work movement has given me, I dreamed the following dream, and I'm going to give the two parts to it. I was working on something, and I asked for guidance on the something, and I find myself in a broken road, really. It's broken with construction. It's clogged with traffic. I'm very frustrated. I wake out of the dream feeling sorry for myself. I say to myself, no, Robert, get back in the dream right away. This is one of the more things.
Go back now.
Yeah. Go back in the dream. Go back now. Re-enter the dream now. So I dive back into the dream, and again, it's the same scene. I'm hovering above it. There's clogged and broken traffic and broken street, clogged traffic. Then I see a beautiful being, and he can fly. He's hovering above the traffic, and he can fly. I guess I wasn't hovering to begin with, but I see this guy. He can fly. Oh, yes, I'm dreaming. Of course, I'm in a lucid dream now. Who is he? Well, he looks like an impossibly beautiful radiant version of myself, an impossibly beautiful radiant double, and he whizzes up some kind of tunnel like a storm drain going up, and I follow him, and I come out on top of a wild mountain, wild, beautiful, natural setting, and I've decided to jettison my original intention and see where this is taking me. It's taking me somewhere else. There's a shelter. It's like a traditional Iroquoian longhouse up there among the trees, and I stand in the threshold, and there are people singing and chanting. I don't want to disrupt them, but they welcome me. The elders, the grandmothers bring me in. And eventually I sing with them, I drum with them, and eventually I lie by the fire at the center of the circle. And the dream people come to me one by one, and they take red-hot coals, and they place them over my eyes, and they say, we do this so that you may see clearly. And they place the red hot coals over my ears, and they say, we do this so you will hear clearly. They place one on my tongue, we do this so you will speak only truth. And they place a red hot coal over my heart, and I feel a stab of pain as the fire goes to my heart, and then streams up to my throat. And they say in this musical cadence language, which is not English, but which I now understand, we do this to open your heart and the passage from your heart to your throat. So henceforth, you will act and speak only from the heart. Well, I did no analysis with this dream, Jean. I got in my car,
no need.
I drove to a lake in the woods within reach of my house, and I said to the hawk that was nighting through the clouds and the lake and the trees, I said, henceforth, I will act and speak only from the heart. That dream has informed and oriented my life. I still make mistakes all the time. I fall down every day. But on the darkest or most confusing day, I will turn to that dream as a beacon, and as a hearth fire, a place of warmth and light that will restore my orientation, give me back my bearings. That is probably, beyond any other single dream, the one that has informed and oriented what I do for the last 25 years or more.
You know, I'm so glad that you told that and told it now, because I know that my experience, you witnessed me wanting to have a spirit guide, has been different from that particular kind of opening in the dream. Often mine are interactive in the sense that I will dream something and then later figure out what that means in terms of my own calling or my own path. And, you know, I think that both are valid. I think that, for example, when 9/11 happened, there were a lot of people. I was moderating an online bulletin board for the IASD at the time, and there were hundreds of people, literally, who wrote and said they'd had precognitive dreams about the event, but they had talked to so-and-so, and they didn't. One was a college kid. He woke up. He told his roommates he was going to New York University, and he said, we've got to get out of here. He said the room was full of fog, and they said, go back to sleep. And a few hours later, you know, the room was, in fact, full of dust. So my own dream was that I was standing in the doorway of a tower in an airport, a control room, and there was just a lot of activity and a lot of panic among the people that were. And what I realized after I woke up from the dream was, yeah, that was precognitive. I probably really was there in the control tower. Could I have done anything? No. It was happening at the moment. But what I was able to do, and for the people who were saying, well, I've had precognitive dreams about all of this, was to say, you know, what is it about precognitive dreams, and what can we do with them? You know, there were people who were like, well, maybe I'll just give up on dreaming, because what good does it do? Well, no. Time being flexible as it is, you can even go back into that time and maybe move things a little bit. And so I was able to write for an online publication, you know, to all of those people who had been having precognitions and going, well, what good does it do? That's the kind of thing that I've had where, you know, it's a knowing inside. It's an internal knowing that says, well, okay, I had one of those. Here's what happened with mine. Here's what you can do with yours.
Mm. Well, it's a question many people ask. It's a sad one. It's a tragic one when something bad happens and they dreamed it ahead of time, whether it's a mass event or a more specific family or community event. Why should I dream at all if I see bad things and can't do anything about it? There are things we can do, of course. We need to understand any future we can foresee through dreaming or intuition is a possible or probable future. It's rarely 100% certain that event is going to take place. We'll have a varying degree of influence on whether we can shape the future event that we see. If it's something involving our own lives, our own driving patterns, the possible accident of that intersection, clearly there are things
right.
We can do. If
go another way.
Involving getting together with Mr. Wright or Ms. Wright or the Wright home. Or else clearly there are things that we can do. If it's a mass event, if it's a natural disaster, a tsunami or volcanic eruption, there's probably nothing we can do unless we have a direct line to the Earth Goddess or the Sea Goddess, except maybe advise our friends to be careful if they're vacationing in that area. If it's something that is going to be the result of human evil, human malice, well, there's a discussion to be had, because the role of prophet is not an easy one, and the role of the accurate dream psychic with accurate information in terms of deploying that information is not straightforward. With all these uncomfortable questions in the air, we have to pause for another break. We're talking to Jean Campbell of the IASD, the Dream Association. This is Where the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Where the Dream with Robert Moss. Our guest is Jean Campbell. You can find her website for the World Peace Bridge at World Dreams Peace Bridge?
It's World Dreams Peace Bridge. Now, talk about something coming up in a dream. I'm like, this does not make sense, those words together. But you won't forget it. And the website is worlddreamspeacebridge.org.
Okay, .org. All right, I got the last bit wrong. We were talking about our relations with the future, people dreaming 9/11. Yes, thousands of people dream 9/11. Actually, 2 years before 9/11, in one of my dream-sharing groups, a woman came almost white-faced with a dream called The End of the World, in which she saw U.S. planes crashing into U.S. buildings, not the specific targets of 9/11, as I recall. We tracked the dream. We had a group of 14 mm-hmm. people journey with the drum to track the dream. We saw Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iraq. We saw a pattern of Middle East involvement and conflagration spreading into war across the Middle East, which is very uncomfortably familiar now in terms of the history of Iraq and all of that. So we saw some elements. We may have picked up something that was in the air. I don't think rationally there's anything we could have done with the information that would have averted what happened, which came 2 years later. So we might have, she might have dreamed up some version of what was literally in the air. As I said, you know, the role of the prophet is not a comfortable or easy one. I think I have a self-denying ordinance in terms of my own ability to pick up things on a global scale. I have actually explicitly said I only want to see things that I can do, something that can help me to do some good.
I don't want to see the whole panorama of human suffering
and evil and warfare and all the rest. I only want to see things, you know, that will enable me to do some good. I think that's my own rule to preserve my own sanity as a dreamer. If we can't be open to absolutely everything, and we can't take on the burden that comes with thinking that you keep seeing things that you can't do anything about. Having said all that, let's notice, you know this too, we are time travelers in our dreams. We travel into the possible future. We travel into the past. We travel also, I find this fascinating, into parallel worlds, parallel life experiences, where we're doing something a bit different or very different from what we're doing right now. And we might see ourselves in contact with other people in all these situations, which might expand our understanding of what might be involved in any relationship. So living in the many worlds consciously, recognizing that there are parallel event tracks, being able to draw lessons and maybe even gifts from a parallel life experience, this to me is one of the most fascinating aspects of conscious active dreaming.
It has been people will say, why did you get into that thing? And to me, I cannot imagine anything more interesting than our abilities in consciousness, which if we allow ourselves, we can prove to ourselves time after time that there is some value in dreaming that event, that idea, whatever. I mean, I think that it's fascinating that consciousness is obviously not time and space directly related. It's like, no, we can travel all over the place and time. You know, who wouldn't want
to
do that?
Well, we live, science increasingly concurs in the vastness of non-local mind. Perhaps we have the ability to go anywhere within the field of mind. This is where Eastern philosophy and ancient mystics and some people in modern physics agree. We have access. You know, in different traditions, there are different ways of understanding the kind of information we have access to, whether it's Jung's collective unconscious or the Akashic records or something else. I know from my own experience, leading many groups at many levels around the world in expanding consciousness through shamanic journeying and lucid dreaming and observation of synchronicity, I know that we just need the right place on which to stand. Give me a place on which to stand, and I will show you the realms of non-local mind. And for that, it's nice to collect the portals, doorways, images, entry points, and we do that through collecting the right dreams and personal images, and sometimes by offering imaginal architectures. I like helping to construct spaces in non-ordinary reality by, let us say, imaginal construction, which groups
yes.
can travel to and use, not to have a controlled experience, not to be inside a box, but simply as a door leading to another door, leading to an experience in a parallel world, an experience in another lifetime, an experience with a teacher on a higher plane. Well, let's come back to the theme of teachers and guides for a moment. I'm deeply in agreement with the ancient understanding, this is Plotinus, for example, that the most fundamental life teacher is yourself, with a slightly big S, on the level above the
slightly big S.
Now, that aspect of your higher self who is within reach of you, but not down here in the muck and the mud and the hubbub and the trouble of ordinary life. I sometimes call this the double on the balcony. And I notice that in dreams we are in contact with a being like this who is no stranger, but is an aspect of the higher self. And it is delightful to me to have helped facilitate an experience where people have a more conscious encounter with that slightly higher self and bring some takeaways from the encounter which they can apply in embodied life.
And when we talk about incubation, dream incubation, I think that one of the places that people sometimes miss that can be wonderful is to incubate dreams that will be helpful to me in my life. And that's where I've encountered the kind of people, the slightly capitalized self, that, you know, it's nice to know. It's nice to know that I'm there.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm all in favor of dream incubation. I'm also in favor of not posing the same intention or asking for the same thing too often. It irritates the other intelligences that you might be encountering.
Oh, maybe you can say the intelligence of myself.
Spontaneous play. I'm also greatly in favor, Gene, of hanging out in the hypnagogic state, the place between sleep and awake. I'm astonished that still so little importance is accorded to this in conferences on dreaming. For me, the liminal space between sleep and awake is prime time. Prime time to embark on lucid dream adventures, prime time to make creative breakthroughs, make connections that escape the ordinary time, prime time for transpersonal contact or contact with inner guides, prime time to set off on an interesting excursion. I spend hours every night traveling from the hypnagogic space. And, of course, if you start out like that, it's not difficult to stay lucid and remain lucid through a whole series of adventures. That is one of my favorite areas for experimenting.
Yeah, it is for me, too. And you might want to even say, what is hypnagogic space?
Well, it's a place between sleep and awake. Tinkerbell defined it very well when she told Peter Pan, when he was sad because his fairy friend was going away, Tinkerbell told Peter Pan, look for me in the place between sleep and awake. There I will wait for you. There I will always love you. So that's the Tinkerbell definition is my favorite one. There's only one full-scale book on the hypnagogic state that I know by a Greek Cypriot called Mavromatis, which came out in the 1980s. Pretty good. It's got a mixture of scholarship and science and personal experience. But we need much more about that. Of course, I write about it in chapters of my various books. But that is probably my favorite place for dreaming in the larger sense of the word and for beginning to practice what the dream yogis call continuity of consciousness.
Yes, and, you know, I mean, to me, Robert, I think that people allow themselves that kind of freedom to explore. They will find that dreams are enjoyable. Hypnagogy is enjoyable. Consciousness is enjoyable. Rather than something to be feared or full of anxiety about.
Well, these are worlds of fun and adventure. We've been talking with Jean Campbell. Her website is worlddreamspeacebridge.org. We'll be back in a moment to say thank you and dream on. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
This is all such fun dreaming and talking to my friend Jean Campbell about all that dreaming can be. I remember a man who came to one of my early workshops. He said, I've come because I feel I've been missing the movies. As you become a more conscious, a more active dreamer, you might find that not only are you catching the movies, but you can step through the screen and become an actor inside the movie, and then you can take the director's chair and direct the whole thing and change the script if you like. That's one of the things possible.
Absolutely.
And tremendous fun as you grow your abilities as a dreamer. Thank you so much for sharing with us, Jean.
Thank you, Robert. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. So, from now until next time, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.